The government helps a lot of people with rent, but landlords often turn them down. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. More than 2 million Americans receive help from the federal government to pay their rent. It's known as Section 8 housing, or technically the Housing Choice Voucher Program. But new research says low-income families don't actually have much choice at all in where they use their vouchers. That's because a lot of landlords refuse to take them. Now, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, is trying to change that. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Back in April, Marketplace aired a story about Jill Williams, a veteran in Maryland who'd struggled to find a landlord willing to accept her housing voucher.
Traveled to several apartment complexes and constantly heard the word no.
A new study from the Urban Institute, commissioned by HUD, finds that's a common experience. Mary Cunningham is one of the authors.
We called about 4,000 landlords across five cities, and what we found was that there was a really high rate of door slamming.
In Fort Worth, Texas, 78% of the landlords contacted denied vouchers, 76% in L.A. HUD's director of housing voucher programs, Stephen Durham, says landlords often say they don't want to deal with the government's red tape.
We're inviting them to give us their feedback on what would entice them to participate in this type of program. The goal is to get them to say yes.
Some possibilities on the table: tax incentives or signing bonuses for accepting tenants with vouchers. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Tomorrow will mark the longest bull run in history, the longest stretch of rising stock prices on the S&P 500, uninterrupted by severe declines. That is good, but it does bring out the old what goes up must come down feeling. And I asked Karen Cavanaugh about that. She's a market strategist for Voya Investment Management.
That doesn't mean that the market is going to fizzle out. Bull markets don't die of old age. And in fact, this bull market still has plenty of room to run. And that's because tax cuts have really started to work their way through the economy. So that's really propping up economic growth. In fact, we're seeing a very robust economic outlook. So I think that even though these are the late innings of a bull market, this could be a doubleheader. And I've been saying that for a long time, that we definitely have room to keep going.
But what if the Federal Reserve continues to raise rates? Is that not going to cool things down just a little?
Well, the Fed is going to continue to raise rates if economic growth dictates. They're going to be slow and steady. And as long as we have a commensurate economic growth, then it should not slow things down too much.
Karen Cavanaugh, market strategist for Voya Investment Management. Thanks, and hope you're right.
I will be, but you can always call me and call me out on the carpet if I'm not. Take care.
We recently heard from Tom in Basel, Switzerland, who wrote to tell us that he appreciates and trusts the way that Marketplace analyzes the economy without foolishness or bias and makes him think about issues in different ways. Now, if you agree with Tom, please join him as a Marketplace investor by donating online at marketplace.org. Thanks to Tom and everyone who makes our work possible.
Most companies that go public are not profitable. Last year, 76% of them made no money after their IPO. That is the highest percentage since the dot-com boom. During that boom, companies like Google and Amazon were less interested in planning for long-term growth and just getting as many eyeballs on their product as possible, as quickly as possible. These days, companies like MoviePass and Blue Apron are using that same strategy. My Marketplace colleague David Brancaccio spoke with Jay Ritter, professor at the University of Florida's Warrington College of Business, to understand what's going on.
I guess I shouldn't be deliberately naive. It's not like right after an initial public offering, we expect companies to pour out big profits. That's a rarity, actually.
It's been a rarity in recent years, but that was not always the case. In the 80s and 90s, most of the companies that went public were profitable.
That's so interesting. And yet I saw a statistic that last year, 76% of newly public companies were unprofitable soon after the public offering. So we see this is a new era where I guess investors are willing to put up with no profit for longer.
Obviously. In fact, this year, the percentage that are unprofitable has inched up to 80%.
Okay, 80% of the new IPOs don't generate a profit. Some of that is the nature of those companies that are selling stock to the public for the first time. I think a lot of them are, what, biotechnology?
Yes, And biotech companies typically not only are unprofitable, they typically don't even have any revenue.
No revenue, no profit. What are they offering? I mean, they're offering innovation, but it's a risky business with eyes firmly on the future.
Very much so. The vast majority of biotech companies are never going to develop a commercially viable drug. But as long as there's sufficient upside potential, investors are willing to pay for that potential upside.
Now, during the great dot-com boom, the narrative that emerged was, why didn't we ask more of these companies if they're ever going to actually make money? Have we forgotten that lesson here in 2018, or is it just not the question to really ask?
It depends. Back then, the mantra was first mover advantage. And Amazon.com, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn have succeeded. But what happened in the late 90s is there were a lot of companies competing to be the winner-take-all in a niche where not every idea works out in terms of a profitable business being there, even if you're better than the competition.
Helping us chew on this data that most companies that go public don't make money. Jay Ritter, professor at the University of Florida's Warrington College of Business. Professor, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.